From Learfield on the Vermont Sports Network, this is the Cat's Den, presented by Vermont Mutual Insurance Group, protecting Vermonters since 1828. Now, here is your host, Brady Farkas.
What's up, everybody? Brady Farkas here. We are in the Cat's Den on this Tuesday, and that means the show predominantly focused on UVM talk, UVM basketball, UVM hockey. We'll get to all of it here in this hour. We're a few minutes away from Jim Hart, head coach, and the head of the Albany City Rocks, the program that produced Anthony Lamb, the star freshman, really making headway here in Burlington. Could be and should be the conference rookie of the year. But the breaking news of the day in the NHL, this one has more layers to it than I could even think about. So here's the line here. Claude Julien, fired by the Boston Bruins last week. Remember, fired, cowardly fired, the day of the Patriots Super Bowl parade. He is now the head coach of the Montreal Canadiens, the rival to the Bruins. So Julien gets fired by the Bruins. He's now the head coach in Montreal. So there had to have been a coaching change in Montreal. The Canadiens have fired Michel Therrien, who had them in first place in the Atlantic Division. So here you have multiple storylines. One, team in first place has fired their head coach. Two, has replaced that coach with a coach who was just fired by their rival, by a team that was lower than them in the standings. So what's going on here? Julien no longer good enough to be the head coach of a second place team. All of a sudden, good enough to be the head coach of a first place team. Therrien is in first place, gets fired. How do you fire the head coach of a first place team? That is what the Canadiens have just done. Here's another kicker. This is the second time that the Canadiens have fired Therrien and replaced him with Julien. I mean, what is going to be different about Julien in Montreal now than Julien in Montreal 10 years ago? Is he a better coach? I'm sure he's a better coach because he's got more experience and all that. But are things going to be drastically different this time around? Is the team set up that much better? Is ownership better? Are the players better? I mean, Julien went 77-77, Therrien went 77-77 his first time around. He got a second job. Julien got relieved of his duties in Montreal. He gets the job again. What's up with the retreads north of the border here? Man, this is a crazy story. Again, Montreal's in first place right now. The Bruins are 3-0 without Claude Julien as their head coach. Somebody here has made a mistake. If Claude Julien is so great that the team in first place wants him, then the Bruins have made a mistake in firing him. If Claude Julien is washed up and is no longer a head coach, then the team in first place just canned a good coach to bring in a failure. Which side are we going to fall on here? Well, we've got 2.5 months here to figure it out over the course of the NHL regular season, but a truly just a quirky story in the NHL today. My initial thoughts, I thought the Bruins made a mistake in firing Julien in the first place. I mean, Julien had been in the playoffs 7 years out of nine. He was in his 10th year, had won a cup, had been to another cup, had won a President's Trophy in 2014. Clearly, he knows how to coach. He knows how to coach hockey. My first reaction was that the Bruins made a mistake getting rid of him. My second reaction is, what are the Canadiens doing on overreaction day here? Yeah, they've scuffled in their last 10, going 3-6-1. But Michel Therrien had you in first place. How do you justify firing a first-place coach? Well, when's the last time we saw it happen? Well, we saw the Cavaliers fire David Blatt a year ago and then go on to win the finals with Tyronn Lue. So, I mean, I just throw my arms up in this one and say there's so many layers to this. So many layers to this. It's just difficult to really wrap your head around it right now. It is Champlain Valley game night here on this Tuesday. That means we enter the Cat's Den again. The show predominantly UVM talk. And when we talk about UVM right now, we're talking about the UVM men's basketball team. 13-0 in America East play. They go for 14 in a row, 14-0 in the America East tomorrow when they take on UMass Lowell on the road. Going to be a tough game for UVM because they've got some sickness going through the team right now. Kurt Steidel only played 4 minutes the other day. Josh Herlihy, he's not going to travel with the team to UMass Lowell. How do those things impact tomorrow's game against UMass Lowell? We'll have to find out and see if anyone else doesn't play significant minutes or doesn't play well or isn't able to make the trip. We'll see all that by tomorrow. Again, we'll have the coverage for you at 6:30. One thing we can all agree on right now about the Catamounts is that Anthony Lamb has been a really, really big piece to this team. And you don't always see that because he's a freshman. He's a true freshman. He's not a redshirt. He's a guy who just came out of high school a year ago and is now dominating for UVM. A guy who can put up, who has put up 25-point games, 27-point games. He's had the freshman clunker where he's put up 2, 6, 8, whatever. But he's been a really, really central part of this team. Did anybody anticipate that freshman Anthony Lamb from Rochester, New York, was going to be a guy for UVM this year? It was going to be just an absolute beast for the Catamounts. Well, I bet one guy did, and that guy's on the phone right now. It's Jim Hart, the head coach of the elite travel team known as the Albany City Rocks, and that is the program that produced Anthony Lamb. So, Coach Hart, on the phone with us now on the TikTok Jewelers guest line. Coach, how you doing?
Great to be here. Doing well today. Big hoop night.
All right, so let's see this. Anthony Lamb's won Rookie of the Week in the America East Conference 5-6 times. He's probably going to win Rookie of the Year in the America East Conference. Did you see this coming?
Well, a lot of times I want to be humble and say, no, I didn't. But this time, yes, I absolutely did see it coming.
What makes Anthony Lamb so special? What did you know about him that before he even got on campus?
Well, people throw around the word motor. He's got a high motor. He's got great desire. He plays hard. And we use that term to describe a lot of people. But I don't know many people that take it to the level Anthony does. His desire to win, his will, and his effort really is unsurpassed. And from the early times we had him, he would just outwork bigger opponents. In the EYBL that he played in with us, he would a lot of times be playing center for us, going against 6'11", Mo Bamba, who's going to be a lottery pick, DeAndre Ayton's going to be a lottery pick, and he would routinely get the better of whoever he went up against. And he was a double-double every game, took charges, rebounded, played hard. So you knew when he got to, if he chose the right level in college and chose a winning program, the great coaching staff, those same things would hold true for him.
What was it like? What was it like for him on the recruiting trail with you? Did he have a lot of offers? Did he fly under the radar even though he played so well? How did he end up here in Burlington?
Well, he flew under the radar from the high majors because he doesn't pass the initial look test. He's a 6'5", 6'6", power forward. So people assume to excel at the higher levels of Division One, you've got to be a 6'8 power forward. So what do you see? You see the high majors recruit 6'8", 6'9", skinny guys with a lot of potential that may or may not grow into their bodies and become productive. But it does. There's not a clear path for a 6'5 or 6'6 front court player at the highest levels. So with his stellar play on the EYBL, and he was top 10 in rebounding and field goal percentage, by the time he was done with his junior summer, he had 25 scholarship offers, but they were all pretty much at the same level. There was some low A-10s, all the MAC schools, Canisius, Niagara, Siena, Iona. The America East offered him, UAlbany, Vermont, Hofstra, and the Colonial. So there was, you know, he probably, like I said, had 20-plus offers, none of them high majors.
Jim Hart of the Albany City Rocks with us here on Champlain Valley Game Night. It's Tuesday, so we're in the Cat's Den here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. As good as Anthony Lamb is right now, he doesn't have to be the guy here at UVM because it's a veteran-laden team with juniors like Trabell Haynes and seniors like Kurt Steidel and a redshirt sophomore like Ernie Duncan. So I assume there's some things that Anthony Lamb has in his game that we haven't even gotten a chance to see yet. We finally started to see him shoot the ball from the outside, hit a couple of threes in the last couple of games, hadn't hit one in all of conference play, you know, until the last week and a half or so. What else can he do that maybe we haven't seen yet?
Well, he's one of those guys who will constantly evolve. He'll add something to his game, you know, with each passing year. So I think eventually he's going to be a proven perimeter player. But to show his coachability, if you look back at the stats the first 10 games, he took a lot of threes. The ball just didn't go in. I think the first game he was 2 for 2, and in the preseason game he hit 4 or 5, and he shot the ball really well in preseason. But 10 games in, when he was shooting 20% from the line, I think Coach Becker and the staff said, look, Anthony, you know, you're shooting 58% in here. We've got other guys. Stick with what you're good at. And to his credit, he just literally stopped shooting threes for a while and got his game refocused on taking care of the inside first and working his way out. And I think now that he's got more comfortable with where he should be, you know, obviously if he's open on a kickout, he's going to knock it in. So he has that ability, but you've got so many guys on your team that can shoot the ball. And like you said, veterans. And, you know, it's a tribute to the coaching staff that, you know, they're willing to put the brakes on the kid, and they've had to a couple times from what I understand. So they'll tell him to pump his brakes every now and then, and he'll respond. He'll respond in a good way because it'll, you know, make him work that much harder. But I think before you're done in your 4 years there, you're going to see just about everything from this kid.
How did you meet Anthony Lamb, and how did he get involved with the City Rocks? Because for those who don't know, the City Rocks, well, they travel a lot, are based in Albany. Anthony Lamb's from Rochester, 3.5, 4.5 hours away, depending on how far into Rochester you go. How did that work, getting him on the team? How did it work with practice? How did you get involved with Anthony?
Well, most of our team now, our top teams, our EYBL teams, we're spread out across upstate New York. So we do have Buffalo, Rochester, Syracuse, and Albany for the last few years. So that's not that uncommon. And what we do is at the end of the high school season, the next 3 or 4 weekends in March, we practice on weekends. And we'll do a Saturday at 1 o'clock, have dinner, Saturday again at 7, come back Sunday morning at 9, and then people who have a distance to go home. So that's 3 practices in a weekend, and at the end of 4 weekends, you've got 12 practices. So it's almost close to an equivalent of a high school preseason or even college before they start playing. So he would come in on the weekends. Mom would drive him, stay over one night, and, you know, behind every great man, there's a great woman, and this kid is, he's got the mom of all moms. Rachel Lamb is, you know, she's a single mom, and she just did anything and everything she could for this kid. She's a gem, and she came to every game, and she was our loudest fan. I think a couple times if I thought we were getting a bad whistle, I'd look at Rachel and I'd say, come on, Rachel, step it up. And she would help us out a little bit. But he made the trek. He joined us at the end of his 15-year-old, when he's 15, and played 15-year-old AU Nationals with us. So he and Kevin teamed up a little bit there, Kevin Herter and Quentin Rose. And what helped you guys get him is one of our coaches from our program became an assistant at Vermont. So he had a prior relationship with Anthony, and that's Hamlet Tibbs. And if you know Hamlet, he's just got away with kids. He's a great role model for them. He connects with them great. And so he had a prior relationship with Anthony, which really helped open the door recruiting for Vermont.
Jim Hart of the Albany City Rocks with us here on Champlain Valley Game Night inside the Cat's Den. You know, you mentioned it earlier in the interview, and it's one thing that's really, really apparent if you're a UVM fan, is that Anthony Lamb is a team player. That's not really the reputation of AAU. AAU gets the rap of me, 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 selfish play, you know, breakdown of basketball. But that's not Anthony Lamb. That's really not any of the City Rocks players that have come out from Jimmer Fredette a handful of years ago and on down the line. The City Rocks players have been traditionally team-oriented. So how are you able to kind of buck that stereotype?
Well, I mean, it's probably, more again, a tribute to some of, you know, I'm just one of the 35 or 40 coaches on our program. And through our success, we've, you know, basically give the message to the kids that there's no kid bigger than this program. You know, I don't care if you're ranked in the top whatever, you know, you have to do the things the way we do. And we have a certain culture, and we expect our kids to do well in school and behave themselves and all those things that maybe some other AAU teams will turn the other cheek based on your talent. So, you know, nobody, you know, we don't have parents coaching at the older levels. So, you know, when Anthony comes into the program, we say, well, you know, you'll earn whatever your work dictates. And, you know, it's that old adage, it's team first.
Last question, just because I'm fascinated by it. And I played travel baseball and pretty seriously, and I played college baseball and I coach college baseball. So you see travel teams like this. How do you kind of compromise between, look, you have a kid who needs to get exposure or is being heavily recruited and needs to get seen, so you want to play him all the time. You have other kids that are paying a lot of money and making a lot of sacrifice and traveling a great distance to be a part of the team. How do you balance kind of helping individuals reach their goals, but the rest of the team needs attention also?
Well, it's like Calipari, you know, servant leadership. If you let the kids eat first, if it's about the kids, then your team goals should come as well. And I let the kids know that I'm there about them. There is an element of individualism, you know, in AAU, because let's face it, the kids are trying to, you know, be seen in front of colleges. So I try and put them out there in a good light. And, you know, I have to remind kids, most kids will think, okay, I'm a driver, I got to show college coaches I can shoot it, or I'm a shooter, I got to show coaches I can drive it. And I get to tell them, I've done this 20 plus years. They're going to call me, and if they see a guy who takes it to the basket 100 times, they'll ask me, Jim, can he shoot it? I say, actually, he's quite a good shooter, you know, blah, blah, blah. He regularly makes 15 out of 20 in drills, but we have other guys who shoot even better. So I tell them this is not his role on this team. So I get to tell them that they can do it. But I say, if you go out there and show them what you can't do, then, you know, I can't help you out there. So that helps the kids stay in their lane with us. And then in terms of balancing with the kids who might not play as much, at our oldest two teams on the travel circuit, they don't pay anything. So basically, you know, everyone's there, so we don't necessarily owe anybody any minutes. And we say it's going to be similar to like when you are in college. And we see, you know, McDonald All-Americans sitting. I was at the Louisville-Syracuse game last night, and a little guy comes in off the bench for Louisville, 5'10", 180 pounds, soaking wet, and had 7 points in overtime. And they have B.J. King, a McDonald All-American, couldn't get in a game for Rick Pitino. So it's, you know, who is going to help the team out at that moment? And that's kind of how we do it the same way.
Jim Hart of the Albany City Rocks, the program that helped produce Anthony Lamb and helped bring Anthony Lamb to UVM, a guy who's, for my money, the America East Rookie of the Year. Catamounts 13-0. They'll go for 14 straight wins in league play tomorrow on the road at UMass Lowell, and we'll have the pregame coverage at 6:30. Jim Hart, thank you. And, hey, I hope there's a couple more prospects down the line, because up here in Burlington, we're looking forward to it.
Well, you know, the staff does a great job there. Coach Becker's a phenomenal coach in-game, and it just seems like you guys have a winning culture up there as well. I mean, you've been to the tournament so many times. So I think it is a good place, and, you know, kids can get away a little bit from upstate New York and then can also have that opportunity to play a lot of, you know, road games in the league close by. So Vermont's a great place. Wish you guys nothing but the best, and you got one of our best ones there. You really do have one of my favorites in Anthony Lamb.
Thanks a lot, Coach. We appreciate the time. Jim Hart with us here on Champlain Valley Game Night on the Cats Den. You know, that's the kind of inside stuff that fans and even us here as media personalities, we don't usually get that, right? We don't get the inside, you know, single mom drove him 3 hours to get to practice, 4 hours to get to practice every weekend. You don't hear that kind of stuff often. So a great interview, and thanks to Jim Hart of the Albany City Rocks, Anthony Lamb's AAU coach, who helped send him to UVM with us here on the Cats Den. Look, when we come back, I have a story for you. If you are a dog owner, I hope you're outraged by this. I chased a dog around for 20 minutes today, about a mile. If you're a dog owner, I hope you're upset. Get ready to tweet in your responses at this, because this one absolutely baffled me. We come back, Champlain Valley Game Night next. Coming up tomorrow, Mike and Mike in the Morning from 6 to 10 a.m., Greeny and Golic talk about the NBA's Eastern Conference.
Farkas.
What's up, everybody? Brady Farkas here, Champlain Valley Game Night in the Cat's Den on this Tuesday. Thanks to the Windjammer for sponsoring the Cat's Den, as we always do. Learfield as well on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3ESPN.com, and the 101.3 ESPN app. If you missed the interview or came in late to the interview with Jim Hart, the head of the Albany City Rocks, which is the program that produced UVM star freshman Anthony Lamb, it is now up at 101.3ESPN.com. Thanks to our great staff, our booth full of producers. I'm looking at them right now. They are tirelessly working to get you that content this morning. And, you know, I'm not usually a guy who likes to start off segments with a non-sports topic, because I like to, you know, it's a sports show. You came here for sports. I like to give you sports. I don't like to really deviate from that script. But this morning, I was on my way to work, and I turned left out of my apartment complex, and I saw a black dog, black lab, walking around by itself, and did not have a leash on, had a collar on, didn't have a leash on, though. And I looked around and I said, okay, where's this dog's owner? Because maybe this is just a dog that's well-behaved, is comfortable being off the leash, isn't going to run away, isn't going to chase, you know, isn't going to, you know, hurt anyone, whatever. I thought, okay, where's this dog's owner? I looked way to the right. I looked way to the left. Did not see an owner. So I tried to go over to the dog and tried to see if it had a collar on or just is there an owner nearby. There was a guy maybe about 100 yards ahead, and I called out to him. And I said, sir, is this your dog? He said, no. He goes, I think it's the dog, the guy across the street. He's got three dogs, and maybe I think it's his dog. So at this point, the house he pointed to is way further away than where I found the dog. So I walked up to the guy's house. It's a, and I was trying to say, you know, I was trying to say, sir, ma'am, are you missing your dog right now? And no one answered. But there were three dogs that just started barking at me. And the guy had told me, I think it's his dog because I know he's got three of them. It must be his. So I said, well, there's one, two, and three. So it's not this guy's dog. So then I'm like, okay, this dog is lost. This dog is lost. And I was going to try to catch it. And it was walking ahead of me. It clearly didn't, it wasn't vicious, but it clearly was scared of me. So I was calling it over. Hey, buddy, come here, all that. And could not get the dog's attention. Couldn't get him to come over here. Even lied to the dog and said I had a treat for him. He couldn't, he didn't come over. So I'm walking with the dog now. I'm well behind the dog, but I'm following the dog. The dog now is crossing the street by itself. And it goes and kind of meanders along into various backyards. So I found another yard that it went in the back, and I wanted to tell the person, hey, is this your dog? No one answers. So then I see the dog meander through more backyards, and then it comes back out on the street, and it walks across the street again. So now I'm chasing it, and where I am in my apartment is in Essex. I'm now chasing it all the way towards Five Corners, maybe almost a mile away from where I actually live and where I first spotted the dog. So I'm now late to work at this point because I'm trying to save this dog from getting hit by a car, trying to figure out if it's lost, if it's scared. I don't know if I'm supposed to call animal control. Am I supposed to call 911? I don't know what to do in this situation. The dog still won't come near me. Then it finally goes again across the street for like the second or third time into another backyard, and its owner lets it in the back door. I see the owner let it in the back door. Like, it's no big deal. I'm like, hey, buddy. I didn't talk to the guy, but in my mind, I'm thinking, hey, buddy, it's okay to, like, it's cool if your dog's good off the leash and all that. He was just a mile away from your house, from where you just let him in. He was a mile away from there. He was up near a cemetery. He was up near an open field. He was trudging through the snow by himself. Now, I know very little about dog care. My girlfriend and I have a dog. We've had a dog for 10 months now. I have never had a dog in my life until the dog I have currently. The one thing I know about dogs is this. Keep them on a leash, or if you are going to let them off the leash, you better be with them. Because this dog was a mile away from its home, going in random people's backyards, which is not good for the dog, nor you and your reputation as an owner, nor good for people who might potentially be living in those houses. I mean, I was livid. I was sad for the dog because I thought he was lost, and then livid at the owner who just let his dog off the leash and didn't care. I mean, that dog could have been hit by a car, people. I know nothing about dog ownership. Very, very, very little about dog ownership. I have 10 months of dog caring experience. The one thing I've always known is if you're going to let the dog off the leash, you better be with it. You better be with it for your dog's safety. If you have a comment on that, tweet into the show, at 1013ESPN, or find me on Twitter, at 1013RadioBrady. It is Champlain Valley game night. Again, we talk mostly about the Catamounts on Tuesdays here on 1013ESPN.com. Also, I had to get that story out there. Also, it's Valentine's Day, people. It is Valentine's Day today. Just think about the best Valentine's-related sports names. What are they? The best Valentine's-related sports names. Let's start right at the top. Bobby Valentine. Bobby Valentine, former head coach, in football mode, former manager of the Boston Red Sox. We try to forget about that. Former manager of the New York Mets, helped take the Mets to the World Series back in 2000. There's one. Also obvious. How about Kevin Love? Kevin Love, of course, of the Cavaliers, previously with the Timberwolves, now a champion with the Cavaliers. Now out 6 weeks with an injury to his knee. Could the Cavs have trouble getting back to the NBA Finals without a healthy Love? Now we go off the beaten path a little bit. How about Lovie Smith, Former head coach of the Chicago Bears took them to a Super Bowl where they lost to the Colts. Former head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Lovie Smith. How about Pete and Jalen Rose? Pete Rose, the all-time hit leader in Major League Baseball, banned from baseball, not in the Hall of Fame. Jalen Rose, ESPN NBA broadcaster, will come on after me here as part of Jalen and Jacoby on ESPN. How about former Patriot defensive coordinator Romeo Crennel, another Valentine's Day name? How about left-handed pitcher formerly of the Twins and Blue Jays, left-hander Scott Diamond? A lot of people maybe going to propose tonight. It is Valentine's Day. If you're proposing on Valentine's Day, it's a little corny. It's a little cliche, but I have your support, or you have my support, whatever. Also, NFL defensive back Brandon Flowers of the San Diego Chargers. So there's your Valentine's Day names here on Champlain Valley Game Night. Look, first segment went long. Second segment had to go short. When we come back, I break down more of the UVM Hoops team, gets you ready for them against UMass Lowell tomorrow. And also, we will talk about the most important member of the Red Sox this season as we head towards spring training. Stay tuned, everybody. Champlain Valley Game at the Cat's Den rolls on this Tuesday on 101.3 ESPN.
Every day you listen to the news, but how is that news affecting your finances?
What's up, everybody? Brady Farkas going up until 7 o'clock here on Champlain Valley Game 9 on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. You know, I hate to admit it. Got to give Rich Haskell, our guy here on the huddle, got to give him a little credit. He texts me in. He goes, you just talked to a guy with a great Valentine's Day name. His name was Jim Hart. You just talked to him. Jim Hart of the Albany City Rocks. Yes, another great Valentine's name. Thanks, Rich. Always keeping me on my toes. Again, we go up until 7 o'clock. Remember, tomorrow, UVM men's basketball on the road, 6:30, taking on UMass Lowell. I'm interested to see how things play out here with the sickness going around the UVM team. I mean, Kurt Steidel didn't play a lot, 4 minutes the other night against UMBC the other afternoon. Josh Herlihy, not even going to make the trip tomorrow. What would happen if you had a sickness to a Trey Bell Haynes, to a Ernie Duncan? Who's going to play? Who's not going to play? Who's afflicted? Who's not? Like, it's all semantics. It's all guesswork at this point. All we know is that Herlihy will not play in tomorrow's game as UVM goes for 14-0. What has made UVM so good? When you really break down the Cats, why have they been so dominant this year? And the answer is depth. When you talk about, it doesn't necessarily matter at the conference level. When you talk about teams, really good teams have depth. They have the ability to not let their players get worn out. Look at what happened to Duke last year, okay? Emil Jefferson gets hurt. They really only go six deep, and you get in foul trouble, you're in trouble. You get a guy who's sick or injured, you're in trouble. Those things matter, and they pile up. UVM, they go 8-9 deep. I mean, when you talk about Trey Bell Haynes, Peyton Henson, Ernie Duncan, Kurt Steidel, Dre Wills, Herlihy, Cam Ward. I mean, that's eight right there. And there's someone, and Anthony Lamb, that's nine. You have nine guys that you can really, really competently go to give you valuable minutes on this UVM team. I mean, that is a huge benefit for your conference season, which is a long grind. You know, you're playing Sunday, Wednesday, Saturday, Tuesday, Thursday. Like, you're playing a lot of games. You're playing 2 to 3 games a week. I mean, that's a godsend for head coach John Becker to go to. I mean, if you don't think that depth is important, like if you would rather have five studs and nobody else on the roster, or you could have nine pretty good players, you better be taking the nine pretty good players every single time. I mean, look at UAlbany, okay, a team I followed closely for years. They have arguably the best backcourt in the league in David Nichols and Joe Cremo. Arguably the best and definitely the best scoring backcourt in the league. I mean, they're both getting 17 a game. They are both studs. They get next to nothing offensively from anybody else on the roster. You know, 10 from Dallas Enema, 6 from Mike Rowley, 9 from Greg Sire. They don't get a whole lot from anywhere else. And then when you go to the bench, it drops off even further. And they've played well of late. They'd won 7 of 9 at last check. But are they going to beat a UVM? I mean, they could. But could they consistently beat a UVM? No, they could not consistently beat a UVM because they don't have the depth that UVM has. You're going to get worn down by UVM's depth, by their ability to call on different bodies, by their ability to go and score the basketball from multiple places and defend the basketball on multiple places. You've seen it. Games where Peyton Henson gets 4 and they win. Game where Anthony Lamb gets 6 and they win. Where Trayvon Haynes gets 2 and they win because somebody else has gotten 18. Somebody else has gotten 23. You haven't had a night. It's hard to have 4 guys have an off night. If you're Jairus Lyles at UMBC and you have an off night, team's got zero chance. Cremo Nichols, if they go for 6 and 8, UAlbany loses by 15, hands down. They don't win that game. There's a lot of things that depth brings you, and UVM has it all. Champlain Valley game night here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. A lot of people, as pitchers and catchers report today, have said that they think Chris Sale is the most important Red Sox this year because you gave up everything to get him. You mortgaged the future. You gave up Yoan Moncada. You gave up Michael Kopech. You've put all your eggs in the Chris Sale basket. Therefore, he's the most important player on your roster this year. There's at least 3 more players on the roster more important than Chris Sale. At least three. Starts right here. Number one, stay on the pitching staff. David Price is more important than Chris Sale because as good as Sale is, and even though you gave up a lot to get him, you're not paying him a ton of money. Even if Sale goes 14 and 11, of course it's going to be disappointing. But you're only paying him $47 million cumulative over the next 3 years. I mean, you're paying David Price $200 million. You sought out David Price at $200 million. And in some cases, giving up Moncada and Kopech and paying $47 million is a cheaper price to pay than what you're giving David Price. And you've got Price for 7 years. David Price needs to have a good April, needs to enamor himself with the fans or get enamored by the fans. And then he needs to carry your staff. Even though Chris Sale was brought in to be a really, really good piece, David Price was brought in to be the ace. David Price was brought in to be the ace. And even though Rick Porcello won the Cy Young a year ago, David Price is the most important member of that staff. There's one guy more important than Chris Sale. Number two is Pablo Sandoval. We had Tom Caron on, and he said, well, maybe Brock Holt can win the third base job. If Brock Holt wins the third base job, the Red Sox have a problem. The Red Sox total win expectancy goes from 90.5 to 87.5 if Brock Holt is winning the third base job. Brock Holt's a nice player. Brock Holt should not be carrying the torch for the team at third base. Pablo Sandoval is a left-handed hitter who can be a .280/.300 hitter, hit 18, 20 homers, drive in 75, 85 runs if he's healthy and everything's going right. That's a major advantage for the Sox. You lose David Ortiz, how do you replace that offense? Pablo Sandoval alone doesn't replace David Ortiz, but he goes a long way towards alleviating those concerns. Why didn't the Red Sox sign Edwin Encarnacion? Why didn't they sign Jose Bautista? They didn't want to massively overpay for somebody. You've got a guy on your roster who you missed all of last year who can act as your free agent acquisition. He can act as your big acquisition. If you can get Pablo Sandoval right, he's more important than Chris Sale. You're counting on him more to be an everyday player, to play third base, to be mobile, to hit for contact, to hit for power, to drive in runs, to get on base, to draw walks. You're counting on Pablo Sandoval. He is vital to the 2017 Red Sox. And lastly, but not leastly, another guy more important than Chris Sale of the Red Sox is Dustin Pedroia. He's getting older. He's in his 30s. Is he going to be healthy? If he's not healthy, the team has no depth in the infield. When you traded Moncada, you traded away the depth in the infield. We talked about why UVM is so good, because if somebody's down or having a down night, they can play well still. Red Sox don't have that depth in the infield, and especially in the middle. Aaron Hill, gone. He was your depth piece last year, gone. Moncada, your top prospect, can play the middle, gone. Devin Marrero, not really ready for the major leagues. If he's there, is he a guy you can count on to take the place of a Dustin Pedroia? No, I don't think so. All of that on the field. Also, leadership. Who's the leader of this team? David Ortiz was the face of the franchise for 10 years. 10 years plus. 14 years, David Ortiz was the face of the franchise. Dustin Pedroia was able to play hard, be a dirtbag, be a grinder. And when I say dirtbag, I mean a guy who just plays hard, gets dirty. He was allowed to be that guy. He didn't have to say anything. He didn't have to be a rah-rah guy. He didn't have to be the guy to be the comic relief in the clubhouse. He's got to be that guy now. Mookie Betts isn't that guy at 23 years old. Andrew Benintendi is not that guy. Jackie Bradley Jr. is not that guy. Dustin Pedroia is paid like that guy. He's been a Gold Glover. He's been an MVP. He's been a batting champ. Now he's got to be a leader. He's got to be a guy that can lead this team without David Ortiz. If the Red Sox stumble this year, it's going to be because of injury because they don't have depth in the infield. It's going to be because the bullpen fell apart, or it's going to be because the leadership faltered. If the leadership's going to be strong, Dustin Pedroia is going to be the guy that gives it to him. When we come back here on Champlain Valley Game Night on the Cat's Den, we wrap up the show and we tell you who the Patriots might be looking at in the NFL draft. I know it's 2 months away. It's a name you're going to get excited about. All that and more next, 101.3 ESPN. Coming up tomorrow on Mike and Mike in the Morning from 6 to 10 a.m., Greeny and Gold.
101.3 ESPN, presented by the Windjammer Restaurant. Now, here's your host, Brady Farkas.
What's up, everybody? Brady Farkas, Champlain Valley Game Night here, 101.3 ESPN, 1013ESPN.com, and the 101.3 ESPN app. Remember, if you missed any of the shows, you can find them all online at 1013ESPN.com. You missed any of the interviews, you can find them online at 1013ESPN.com. Who do we have on today? Tom Caron of Nesson talking about the Red Sox, talking about the Bruins, pre the announcement that Claude Julien, fired by the Bruins just last week, is now taking over for the team ahead of the Bruins, the Montreal Canadiens. We also talked to the president of baseball operations for the Red Sox, Dave Dombrowski, as the Sox in Fort Myers for their first team workouts today. Pitchers and catchers reported for duty today. We also talked with Jim Hart, the AAU coach, the Albany City Rocks, and the program that brought UVM star freshman Anthony Lamb. All that and more is online. You know, we're only 2 months away from the NFL draft. And I say only because it's hard to believe. Season just ended. Now we're kind of transitioning to football already again because the football season never seems to end. But 2 months is also a long time from now. Patriots have the last pick in the draft, last pick in the first round of the draft, rather. Who should they be looking at? Well, Fox Sports says really the two best fits for them would be Carl Lawson, defensive end from Auburn, a guy who really could help the pass rush. Patriots were really in the middle of the pack when it came to the pass rush this year. They only had 34 sacks. So, yeah, they could look at that. But the name, there's two names you should be really intrigued by. How about Christian McCaffrey? Christian McCaffrey is the stud running back from Stanford who was a finalist for the Heisman Trophy a year ago, the son of Ed McCaffrey. I mean, he had 2,000 yards rushing as a sophomore. He had 1,600 as a junior. He also caught 45 balls last year, 45 balls in 2015. He caught 37 balls in 2016. I mean, he would be, you talk about running backs who can catch the ball out of the backfield, a la Shane Vereen, a la Deion Lewis, a la James White, guys who the Patriots can build around in the passing game. McCaffrey is the guy. He also runs between the tackles and also has incredible speed. I mean, you're talking about a better version of Deion Lewis, a potential better version of Deion Lewis and James White when you're talking about Christian McCaffrey. It's just a guy that the Patriots could seem to make work. It would be really interesting. Also, the NFL Network mock draft, and you're going to see 150 mock drafts, so I don't put much stock in any of them, but they had the Patriots taking Jabril Peppers, the combo stud from Michigan, who played a little safety, played a little corner, also played some offense, came in as a wildcat quarterback. I mean, star athlete. He's a premium-level athlete, and he's a guy who the Patriots, when you talk about that versatility at the NFL level, Patriots could make good use for him as well. So the Pats, look, the downside of winning the Super Bowl is you get to pick late in the draft. The good side of this draft is it's loaded. If you're talking about names like McCaffrey and Peppers being available at the bottom of the first round, then you're doing some things right. And also remember, the Patriots might end up with another first-round pick if they trade Jimmy Garoppolo. That'll do it for us here on Champlain Valley Game Night, the Cat's Den. A lot of UVM talk today. Again, thanks to Jim Hart of the Albany City Rocks, former head coach for Anthony Lamb on the AAU circuit. UVM men's basketball tomorrow, 6:30. The coverage starts. They're taking on UMass Lowell. Cats looking to go 14-0 in America East play. We will see you tomorrow on the huddle. Remember, Buster Olney will join the show at 5 o'clock.